With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore, and I'm very pleased now to be talking with the Executive Director of the Massachusetts School Counselors Association, Bob Bardwell. And Bob, welcome to MSO. How are you on this lovely spring day?
I am great, thank you.
Bob, as a longtime educator in the Gloucester school system, and a student at one time at Gloucester High School, I went to school in Texas for 3 years in high school. I had various relationships with school counselors, and for a long time when I was a rookie teacher, I did not understand the role of a guidance counselor. I didn't get it. And over the years, of course, I've come to appreciate how difficult it is. And I want to ask you about that in general. You've been a long-time educator yourself. The role of guidance counselor, I don't know, K to 12, I would assume it's a lot different now in 2023 than it was when I started in 1972.
Yes, sir. Very much so.
As teachers, you're expected to do different things and take on different roles. Tell me, please, in the simplest terms, if you would, what is the role of a guidance counselor, and how does that change from level to level? High school has a certain, you know, responsibility, but it does in the other grades as well. Could you explain that to me, please?
Sure. So there's three legs of the stool of school counseling. One is to do academic, so helping students understand course selection if they're a middle school or a high school student and they have those options. Obviously, a second grader doesn't get to pick academic classes. They're told this is what you do by your teacher. Your second leg of the stool is social-emotional, so kids who are struggling with any number of issues, and this also sometimes our school social workers or school psychologists also help with that particular leg of the stool, but certainly school counselors can do mental health work. And the third leg is college or career, or what I like to call future planning. So whether it's a first grader or a sixth grader or a 12th grader, helping students plan beyond high school in terms of, you know, higher education, military work, et cetera. So those are the three basic legs of the stool, and as you referenced, the level will depend differently. Obviously, your elementary counselors are not going to be filling out a FAFSA, a free application for federal student aid,
right,
with the student because it's a little young, but at least the student and their family should know financial aid is available, especially if it's a first-generation college-going student, that financial aid is available to help you pay for school. So even though you might be struggling to pay your rent and have food on the table, that a second grader could aspire to go to college because there's financial aid available for that student. If that student never hears that message along the line until they get to middle school or high school, then they may already have self-selected out of a college option, mm-hmm, for a variety of reasons. So it's important that that's shared. So even though the elementary counselor is primarily focused on the social-emotional piece, you know, again, they don't get to pick classes, and they're really not talking about, you know, let's go, you know, sign up for college classes, like you would do with a high school, mm-hmm, counselor. There is a role for them to play at all three of those. Middle school is going to be more of a balance, lots of social emotional, certainly some career or future planning, and then you certainly have some academic pieces, you know, the students struggling with a teacher or needing extra help because they're failing a class, that kind of thing. And then in your high school level, you really then, in a program that has you know, you're providing all the services. It really could be a third, a third, a third. That typically doesn't happen that way because there's pressure points. You know, a kid going to college is going to need a lot of different support in October than they are going to need around college in, say, January after the process is done. Mm-hmm. But you're going to have certainly ongoing needs for high schoolers around, you know, academics if they're struggling, and around social-emotional pieces. So it's so dependent on where you work and what level you work at, and even if you're in the same district. So like in Boston, I have counselors in the middle levels and the high school level, and they're going to do very different things depending on the school and the community and their needs. So it's really hard because you have a teacher, you know, if I'm a fifth grade math teacher, I teach to the curriculum frameworks, I know what I need to do, I'm going to have colleagues that are doing the same thing, we're going to make sure we're on the same page, we're all teaching the same units, things like that. But school counseling can look totally different even within the same building.
I'm so glad you pointed all of that out. So much of it I was not aware of, even though I was in teaching for a long time. The other thing, this is kind of a loaded question, but as a math teacher at the high school level, I always believed, and I used to teach professional development for teachers both at Salem State and Endicott. I used to believe that the lower the grade level you teach, the more money you should make, because I felt it was an inverse process. It was a whole lot easier for me to teach high school than it was junior high school at that time or middle school. However, what I'm sensing with guidance counselors is everybody deserves the same level, because every level of education, K through 12, the different levels you pointed out, has real special personal challenges.
Right. So you're right. They all should be paid equally and paid more, because it is sometimes, you know, that hazard pay kind of thing, and what we have to deal with is excessive. But because school counseling started as only high school kids needed career and college help, mm-hmm. and that's where, you know, we've changed the term from guidance counselor to school counselor to try to change with the times, to say that we do a lot more than just the advising part around, you know, picking classes and academics and college stuff. So because that's how we started, you're going to find the caseloads at high school are going to be much smaller, and some elementary schools don't even have any mental health person, so whether it's a school counselor or a social worker, because they assume little kids don't need that.
Really? Oh my goodness.
And there's no, you know, funding is an issue, obviously. The pandemic actually has helped a little bit to say to our school leaders and policymakers, everyone was impacted by the pandemic. It is not over. It's still happening. I mean, yes, we're back to school and we don't have to wear masks all the time, or some of us don't. But there still is the impact that we have to acknowledge. And yet there's still, you know, elementary schools that, or you share a counselor, so you have a counselor 1 or 2 days a week. So if you have if your counselor comes on Tuesday and Friday, and, you know, on Wednesday you have a problem, sorry, kid, hold your problem until Friday when your counselor comes back. And I know some schools are small, so they don't warrant on paper of a full-time counselor, but the problem is, it's sort of like, you know, a lot of school districts have provided nurses full-time, and that I totally get, right? Because, you know, you have an emergency, and there's no health provider, like, that's a problem. I would say mental health and the other pieces is as such a problem, but again, it's not always treated that way, in that, like, a lot of schools might have one mental health person, and it might be a social worker who does their thing. They focus typically more on mental health, and that means those students probably aren't getting any lessons on career in college, or if it is, it's sporadic, and there's not necessarily, you know, a focus on future planning. There could be, you know, great lessons, and there's curricula available for folks to provide our elementary age kids with stuff that's going to help them be a better human being and better adult. So it is a little messed up in that we put most of the emphasis on the older grades, but like you were saying, I always think elementary teachers are the ones that set the foundation, and so counselors are the same way. If you have a good counselor in elementary school, then you probably don't need as much support in middle and high school as you would if they don't have those resources.
The thing about counseling at any level, at any place, really, is how personal it is and gets. And I know that, you know, my experience was with high school counselors. And at the school I was at one time, you know, each counselor had 300 kids, which made it really very difficult for everybody. Where do the school counselors go? What do they do? How do they find support when they're overwhelmed? Because, like with teachers, you go to a teacher's union, you go to your principal or whatever. But what do counselors do? Because it can be so personal. I'm guessing that sometimes you don't sleep too well at night because you worry about the kid.
Sure. So, you know, hopefully you're in a building that's big enough to have other resources, other mental health support. So colleagues, again, whether that's a school counselor or a psychologist or a social worker, you know, the people that know best are the ones that do the job you do. If you're, you know, the one person only and you're alone on the island, then, you know, you certainly may have an admin or support staff or teachers to reach out to. But, you know, it's that, you know, you go on a plane and they talk about the oxygen mask comes down.
First
before you help others. So that's really hard for a lot of counselors. In fact, that's why some probably don't make it in this profession, because they can't let it go, and they are, you know, they are taking it in, and they just can't deal with all of that. It takes a special person and their personality to be able to do this job, and it's not for everyone.
Is there a high attrition rate?
I wouldn't say high, but we're, you know, now, like many other educator positions, we're seeing a shortage.
Yeah.
We're seeing that positions aren't filled for a variety of reasons, and that's, you know, I have one colleague who is in a charter school, which may be why, but nonetheless, charter school, where there's supposed to be four mental health providers, and there's only one.
Ugh, good grief.
So there's one person, one counselor doing everything. Now, I mean, maybe they have other resources and other supports available, but the last time I talked to her, she's like, I need three professional staff to join me, because right now we are woefully understaffed. So a good counselor is going to take care of themselves. So whether that's, you know, spending time with your family, whether that's exercising or hobbies or whatever it is that you can do to take care of you, that's super important. A lot of counselors, you know, they don't eat lunch. They don't take time to go to the bathroom because they're just so busy. And, you know, you have a kid crying in your office. You're not like, hold on, I'm going to go have lunch now. And you sit there by yourself crying. And so that's real. And I'm not saying their colleagues in classrooms don't, but the kid typically gets up and leaves and goes to the next class or goes to lunch or wherever they're going. I mean, certainly some kids will stick around for teachers, but they don't have that same level. And if that's, they're sensing it and they don't know how to handle it, then they're going to refer them to the counselor anyway to say, hey, like, you need to talk to a professional, which is appropriate. But my point is some teachers are going to be really good at able to diffuse some of the student, if they know the student well or have that relationship. And that's one of the pieces that I think makes this work so different is we get to know kids really well, especially the ones we see often, and we have those relationships that not all other educators necessarily get. It's a different relationship, but there are some you just want to take home and, you know, make their life better. Not realistic, but it's that idea, like, they have been dealt a really unfortunate set of cards, and they have to work through that, and they can. But it's tough. I mean, they are dealing with a lot of stuff, like you said earlier, that we didn't have. I mean, just the phone in general and social media didn't exist 20 years ago. So all of that drama and all that stuff, maybe it was different. Well, it was different. But my point is you would have a physical fight instead of, you know, taking it out over social media, having an argument with your friend. But how it happens and the instantaneous stuff and the challenges that come along with that alone has dramatically changed what counselors do compared to, you know, 20 years ago. And you know, I'm of the dinosaur age where we didn't have the technology that we do now. And it is made many things better, but it's also made many things worse.
Bob, there are so many things to talk about, and I don't want to keep you too much longer, but what I'm hoping is that I can give you a call in the not-too-distant future to follow up on this, because I have a gazillion questions. And I always found, as a teacher, I always found counselors, and I know one of my best friends is a counselor, to be a safety net for us in the classroom. I didn't have to get into the personal lives of my kids, and I always had about 120 of them, but he did, and I just respect that so much. Finally, Bob, in this particular segment, I'm just, if you could maybe tell me a little bit about what's going on at the annual meeting, because with what's in the news now, with, as you say, the social media aspect of what goes on with kids, what's on your agenda, and tell me a little bit about this annual meeting.
So we meet every spring, so it's April 3rd and 4th. This year it's in Newton, and, you know, there'll be over 600 counselors there virtually and in person to learn new best practices, to learn new technology or new things in the counseling field. A lot of it is around, you know, why people go is just the networking, so they can connect with their colleagues that they maybe haven't seen in a while or have never met. So professional development, networking, and meeting with exhibitors and things like that. So it's a, we have a couple, we have a keynote speaker on ethics in school counseling, which is obviously always important, and we have another one talking about diversity and equity and inclusion, which is obviously an important topic. The challenge with a conference like this is people submit stuff months prior, so things that are hot today may not be on the agenda per se, but we try to pick topics, you know, breakout sessions that will be of interest and helpful to our members. So we're sold out, so that's a good sign, and that way people are definitely coming and taking advantage of what we have to offer. You know, just recently you mentioned, you know, what's going on in the news, like the school shooting piece and the swatting stuff. And, you know, just that idea, like, okay, here we go again, more kids dying in schools. So we have kids who don't feel safe. I mean, that's a huge, huge problem that most adults don't understand because they're not, you know, in second grade anymore. And even if, you know, when they were in second grade, the world they lived in is very different than the world we live in today. And so it's really hard for adults sometimes to understand the trauma that our students have gone through and continue to go through. Every time you have a fire drill or a active shooter drill, it can trigger a student who's had a traumatic event in their life. And that is something that, you know, we want them to be safe, of course, we want to practice, but the drill sometimes has the other effect where it's going to really make kids not feel safe. And so, you know, we wonder then why some kids choose not to go to school or want to be homeschooled or do virtual school. So it is definitely an issue that we need to be addressing and spending more time and resources on. And again, it's tough to be a school leader these days. There's so many, you know, where do you put your emphasis on? But this piece of the trauma is definitely got to be on our radar screen, and we have to do a better job. And we have to take care of our staff better. I was at a meeting the other day, and BPS was 119 schools, and they said 50 of those 119 had a plan around staff support and wellness. And I'm like, there's, you know, 70 too few, because that should be the priority of everybody. Because if your staff, like again with the oxygen mask in the airplane, if the staff aren't doing well, then your students are probably not doing well either. So it's really important that we prioritize wellness of all of our school employees and our students, because that, you know, why would you want to go to a place you spend 6 hours that you don't feel safe in? And that, again, could be a whole other topic for another day.
All right. That is Bob Bardwell, who is the executive director of the Massachusetts School Counselors Association. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.